today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Patrick, I'm a little concerned about today's episode.
Why is that, Jim?
Well, it might be hard for some listeners to understand.
Oh, yeah, I think I know what you mean. It's kind of a Michigan thing.
Okay, Patrick, this is quite something. We've had two patron calls in a row now. This is the second patron episode with special guests. So this thing is growing beyond what we ever anticipated and probably what we can sustain.
Yeah, so. It really has, Jim. We're so lucky, and I think we're slowly, you know, reaching our goal where we don't have to do anything except for put our name on it. You know, we can go and like... I don't know, go bowling or something, you know, something fun. No kidding, of course. But today, folks, you're going to hear a familiar name and a familiar voice who's a really important part of our community. He's a really excellent person and currently, I think, is responsible for probably the top two or three coolest t-shirts I have in my wardrobe collection. And just like our buddy Mike Coley has done, Keith Jacobson has brought a band that he likes and wants to kind of introduce them to our community. So we're super appreciative of that and also of Keith. So Keith, thank you, man.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Patrick. And thanks, Jim. So today, I wanted to bring on and introduce everyone to a band. Actually, let me back up a sec. I actually talk about them on an episode back in March of 2020, which was about 20 years ago. Episode 813 was Michigan Rocks, and I featured this band, The Accidentals, along with two other Michigan artists, Billy Strings and The Warren Treaty. Yep. So let me introduce. We have the whole band here with us. So, Jim, do you want to do that? Is that...
Well, so before you do that, though, because Patrick likes to just kind of plow into the episodes, we should say, because I suspect, given that we have a special guest on, that we'll probably get some first-time listeners here. So if you're listening for the first time, the show is called Rockin' the Suburbs. It's a music conversation, interview, commentary show. With myself, Jim Lenihan, and also my co-host,
Patrick Foster. And yes, sorry about that. Sometimes those things are important.
Yes, he gets so excited. It's true, I understand. Yeah. We do our show out of the Washington, D.C. suburbs of Northern Virginia. Keith is one of our show patrons, and as part of that, we invite him to come on the show from time to time. He gets to pick the topic, and sometimes it's things like just, you know, talking about Michigan bands, or sometimes, you know, one time you talked about the favorite live albums of all time, things like that. So sometimes it's just us talking. But in this case, he wanted to invite on some musicians who he really likes. And so thank you for that, Keith. Again, I want to reiterate that. And now let's learn something about the Accidentals here. So why don't you all introduce yourselves? Let's start with Katie.
Thank you so much for having us. This is one of the rare times in quarantine where the three of us are in different rooms. I play cello, electric cello, guitar, acoustic guitar, and I write and I sing with Sav and Michael and the Accidentals.
Okay. And Sav?
Yeah, I'm Sav Beist. I play in the Accidentals. I play violin and electric bass and acoustic guitar and also do a big chunk of the writing. And I also keep the band entertained. I would volunteer. I would say that I'm the funniest one in the band. So just putting that out there.
Funniest one in the band.
Closely followed by Michael, but still.
And hi, okay. I'm Michael. And I am a resident drummer and every once in a while some acoustic guitar in the Accidentals. And I was added to the roster in about 2014, and I've been with them ever since.
And he's got the best hair in the band.
He does have the best hair in the band.
I can tell. Absolutely. All right. Yeah, oh, nice.
Let's not go down that road.
Take care of it. Take care of it. You want to hang on to that hair. So that's good.
Yes.
Okay. So let me back up here a second. Keith, who lives in Michigan, tell us how you got into this band. What is the origin story of your fandom here?
Sure. So, my wife and I, so I'm in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And so my wife and I I'm going to say, I did a little bit of research. 2017, we saw, I think it was an album release show at the Grand Rapids Art Museum at the Graham. And that was my first sort of introduction to the band. And then since then, of course, that was your sort of major label debut, right? We want to call that. I was on Sony Masterworks Odyssey was that album. And so that was sort of my introduction, Jim. So then, you know, for the last few years, been digging back into the albums, you know, prior to that, and then sort of just following along their career.
Seats and old perfume and mass nostalgic times, forgotten crimes die in the fumes of Polaroids still hanging dark in rooms. The kids these days all tied to each other in the womb, and I share up all the days into the dirt and dust and fray, and I keep the score of everything I have in store. Got good at feeling pain. Obstacles remain, a resolution in the chaos that I made. But I'm not weak, my brain's a hurricane of sky and sea. Beside instead of broken curse on me, I'm not the one.
I think, you know, the thing that impressed me was just the, it's sort of, I guess when you look at it, you're sort of genre bending. I mean, I don't know if there's one genre that you guys are. I mean, you're all multi-instrumentalists and, you know, you have folk, you have classic music, classical music, you know, elements to it, and straight out, you know, rock. And so I just think it's cool, you know, that combo of being able to do everything is very cool. So.
Well, I want to build on that for a second here, because, there's even like some funk in there. There's all kinds of stuff. And I think there's so many bands we interview, Patrick, who are like, you can't define me, right? You know, our sound, and it's, you know, and in a lot of times you kind of can, but in your case, it really is true. You guys do a lot of different styles of music. And so tell me why that's important to you.
Yeah. We're a marketing nightmare pretty much. yeah. It's really hard to like find, like descriptions of what we're trying to do. But I think we come from a lot of different backgrounds. And so when you combine the three of us into an arrangement part of the process, it can really transform how a song sounds. Like, for instance, Katie kind of comes from this jazz, but also very classical background. Like, I don't know if you want to dig into that, Kate.
I definitely grew up watching a lot of classical concerts. My dad is a classical pianist, and my mom studied voice in college, and they also listen to really eclectic, like everything from like pop music to like Bare Naked Ladies and stuff. So for me, a big influence was also being very curious with indie rock and not knowing too much about the live indie rock scene. So that was a big motivator for me, like wanting to try and get out there and play shows and tour and see what that world was like. But yeah, when I met Sav, we were still in high school and we were in our orchestra together. And I thought Sav was really cool because her background was like, I play gigs with my family's band and she could sing harmonies and like improvise on her violin, all things that were very foreign to me.
Yeah, no, you know, like I said, variety of backgrounds. So my parents actually met in Nashville playing music together. And I sort of grew up in their improvisational, like they had a folk band. So I grew up in an improvisational world, kind of playing a bunch of different genres. So when we came together, there was already a lot to work with as far as things that we wanted to try. And then when we added Michael, we added this very, very different side of everything. And it kind of introduced a good backbone to build off of and keep evolving.
Okay. Now, does this create conflict at all, though? Do you ever, like, I think this is more of a folk song. I think this is more of a, you know, rock song. I, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know if you've seen that thing you do, but there's like a lot of conflict on that hit song. Like, should it be a slow song? Should it be a fast song? Right. Do you guys have those kinds of issues too with all the different interests and background?
Well, what's funny is we just got done recording an album together in quarantine. And so we had a lot of those hard conversations almost every single day. But what it came down to is we definitely weren't trying to make a song fit any genre. We were kind of just feeling out what the song required in order to mean what we were trying to say. It's more lyric centric, I think, for us. And then the music is there to help support it. But it was never, we were never like, well, this is definitely a folk song, you know. We did have to kind of start considering more of that element this year, though, because we were trying to think, you know, well, what is commercial? Like, where do we want this? Do we want this to go to radio? Do we want this to go to Spotify? Like, where do we want this to succeed? And so we were starting to incorporate those elements with this next upcoming album. But that being said, we never tried to choke off the song.
Yeah. And with quarantine and setting up our home studio, we've had the time, like, for the first time ever, we've had enough time to recut a song like 3 or 4 times. So I know, like, we would do a whole take where the drums were like super fast, and then we would do a whole different version where the drums were just like shaker or something, you know, and compare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I know there was at least one song that we started from like the ground up like 5 different times, but we had the time to do it, you know, and we were like, well, this is, you know, it's still not feeling exactly how we want it. You know, we have the time, let's just dig our heels in and, you know, and get it done. But yeah, I mean, it was really nice to kind of have that option, doing a lot of the recording this summer and fall, to be able to just do it.
I think it helps that none of us have a whole lot of ego. Like, none of us are like, well, my opinion's definitely the best one out of the group. You know, we're always like really just paying attention to each other and the influences that we make.
Well,
on each
that
song.
Brings up something interesting. I mean, I have a very important question I want to ask, but first I want to ask this sort of other one. I've messed around in a trio myself for a while, just a bad, you know, indie rock garage trio. And early on, you know, when we said to ourselves, hey, you know, we're all good friends. Why don't we just make a loose rule that, you know, the majority rules here, you know, because there's 3 of us, right? So we can't tie. Do you guys have something similar, or is it really like that was the best argument? So, you know, or I see what you're saying there and I didn't think of it that way. Like, how do you guys, you know, when you get to an impasse on something like, I like the shaker version better versus the, you know, electronic trombone version. Like, how do you pick?
Well, the problem is we're all very indecisive. So at that point, we usually bring in somebody else.
Like a mediator.
Like, well, we usually send it to a bunch of different people, like young people, older people, Patreon.
Oh, really?
Patreon. Yeah. Hmm.
Interesting.
And then we just listen to what they say.
I know early on in the process, like when we first started recording, it was kind of like we would get stuck on something and we just weren't sure what to do with it. And then I think our manager was like, well, send it, like, just throw it to your Patreon people. They love you. Like, they'll give you, like, really nice feedback on things that they'll be honest about. And so, like, doing that, I think it was just, like, any time that we just got stuck, it was kind of like, all right, bring in another voice or bring in another opinion and we'll start working on something else and let that kind of do the process.
We did that with other musicians, too. Like, we would have like Dominic Davis, he's the bass player for Jack White. Like, he's a good friend of ours from Michigan. And like every once in a while, I'd be like stuck on a bass line and be like, well, I'm just going to let Dominic play one and then I'll just see what I can take away from that. And that's, you know, it's nice to be able to have people who you can collaborate with even during this time. And, you know,
that's
take
really cool.
From.
And that's such a cool way to solve it. And I love it because it brings in kind of, you know, a different kind of organic element when you let the people that appreciate your music kind of help you figure out where it could go. So that's cool. But here's my really important question. And Jim, I got to tell you. I'm going to ask this question every time we do a band interview from now on. And it's not about Bears,
right.
But I'm just going to ask it and put it out there because
that's a whole other thing.
Well,
we do have Bears in Michigan.
Yeah, I was going to say, there are Bears.
I think we know that.
Great state, let's take my inn. Compass roses bloom again. Home of the water, Canada's daughter. Michigan and again, soft shoulders of sand dunes.
I actually recall as a kid going somewhere up north, and the Accidentals are in Traverse City, Michigan, which is up north. There was a dump that we would go to, and yeah,
I've done this. Go on, finish your story, and then I'll tell you my story.
Yeah, there was like a certain time in the early evening, and I guess they were baited. I was a kid, so I mean, but there was like a time you'd go to the dump, and it was like a bear show would happen every night because they were feeding these
bears. When I was a kid, I had relatives lived in the Upper Peninsula, okay? And that was what people did there for entertainment. They drive to the dump at dusk when the bears come out of the woods and go root through the garbage, and they just sit in their cars and watch them.
That sounds pretty fun.
And for me, from the sophisticated big city of Toledo, Ohio, this was quite an eye opener, right? This was a big.
Oh my gosh!
We're so bored, and the only thing open past 10 o'clock is Meijer. We have to do something.
Yeah. Dude, that's like me. That's like me in quarantine. Like the more tame version is looking out your window and watching squirrels with binoculars, like jump from tree to tree. They're really cool to watch.
They're amazing.
Squirrels are insane. Are.
I like squirrels.
Like chase each other around.
But anyway, you may be wondering why we're talking about this at all, which is for whatever reason, I've had this obsession lately on where bears live.
Yeah.
So that's all. That's and we do, I do, I can say, there I've seen go. Them. They live in Michigan. Yeah. That's absolutely a place where bears live.
Oh, they do. We have one in our neighborhood right now. Black bear.
Yeah, Katie's dad has seen him on walks.
Yeah, people have them as pets there, right?
It's like one black bear.
True.
He just like hangs out, and actually he's really big. So my neighbor, I was like, well, how big is he? Because he saw it, and he's like,
big.
Like just showing. Wow. Sorry, this is a podcast, but it's a hand motion where it just like shows the weight fluctuating from side to side of this bear. It's huge.
Well, okay. Anyway,
where
were you going with this?
Sorry.
Okay, what was your important question?
Because
it can't be more important than this.
Well, probably not. No.
Okay.
I'll tell you guys though. My offspring have. Three of them, and we were all home recently because of the holidays and all that, and my middle offspring MJ showed me something that profoundly changed me. So I'm gonna ask you guys all a question, and anyone you know who has had this happen or done it, let me know. Have you ever drunk Bailey's from a shoe?
Oh, is that from Old Greg?
Oh, Old Greg.
Thank you. Yeah.
We haven't drunk Bailey's.
There it is. That's what I wanted there. Yeah, give me your Old Greg.
Which is so funny because he's now on the Great British Baking Show.
What?
Yeah, he is.
One of the judges. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Noah Fielding.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Once again, I've thrown everything off track.
Keith, do you have any questions?
Yeah. So the band name, The Accidentals, where does that come from?
We're really accident prone, and we came about on this earth by accident, and also there's a music theory reference.
We met
accident. The Accidentals is actually, it's basically whenever there's a note that's not within the key signature that's notated. So there's like flats, there's naturals, there's sharps. It's basically kind of going outside the constraints of what you hear, and we felt like that really worked with what we were trying to do. We were almost the Savage Kittens, but we figured we couldn't get as many corporate gigs with that name, so we kept it for our publishing company.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
When you guys get really big and you're selling out the big venues, you could play as the Savage Kittens when you play like the small intimate venues.
Right. Yeah, surprise, like the Stones.
Surprise
show. Yeah, when you're workshopping something. Yeah.
No, definitely. Yeah. We're collecting a couple of them. There's also Jalapeno Honeymoon. This is like from a list that Kate's dad came up with back when we were picking the band name. Nice. And Flavor Monkeys is another good one. I don't know. There's a lot of them. Yes, I used to love that one.
Didn't we do a show under
we
the
did
name
one
of
in Traverse? Absolutely. Because we played at a venue where the last time we were there, we broke the fire code. So we were like, we have to go under a secret name so we don't break the fire code.
You mean because so many people showed up?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
That is cool, yeah.
So I guess another question. You guys are such a touring band. I mean, that was such a big thing. And then COVID happened last March and just kind of shut everything down from a touring standpoint. How did you sort of pivot during that time? I know you recorded an album, as you said. But
yeah, we pretty much immediately moved to live streaming and recording. And Sav dived in pretty heavy to streaming world and like, put together a bunch of research, basically funneled everything into one document that started with OBS, right? And Sav, you can speak to it. Like, you started getting calls from people, other artists who are like, help, I don't know how to live stream and I feel like I need to.
Yeah, we did like a trial by fire of different live streaming platforms. And so by the time we got done with that, I felt pretty comfortable to do live streaming, but I didn't think the information had been compiled into a place that was easy to read for other musicians. So I did it for myself first. And then I posted it to Facebook to try and, you know, help other artists who were struggling out with live streaming. And then quickly it got picked up by Hypebot and Bands in Town, and people started spreading it to their social groups. And then the Recording Academy got a hold of it. So I started doing consultation calls for different artists and venues. I got brought on to the Bluebirds Tech Talks and Club Passim and a bunch of other venues, and came on for a couple of Recording Academy calls, and it became a totally separate, if you told me like 8 months ago that that would be something I was doing, I would have laughed, because again, I thought my left brain and right brain were totally just messed up and didn't really have a good relationship. And then it just took trial by fire. It's like some people are making sourdough bread, some people are learning how to live stream. That's everybody picked up a different thing from this.
I remember opening that document to like look at it and use it on my own thing, I think for when I was doing one of the Daily Breather episodes, and casually there were just 109 other people viewing it at that moment, and I was like, oh, this has gotten passed around a little bit.
That's cool. Yeah. And you know, it brings up something that I noticed while looking at your website. If you guys go to theaccidentalsmusic.com and you click on the store link, there's some really interesting things there about some workshops and things that you guys look like you have planned coming up here in the next month or so. Can you talk a little bit about what those are and how that's going to work?
The last few months, now that we've wrapped our full-length album, we've been doing lots of co-writing. So we've been doing all these co-writes on Zoom with artists in Nashville and just kind of, you know, these people who we really look up to. A lot of artists who we grew up listening to have agreed to write with us, which is really crazy. And so we are going to be recording and releasing some of the co-writes. And we're also offering songwriting workshops over Zoom on our website. So those are kind of smaller groups where we just pick a theme and share some of the tips that we've learned about writing and write, start a song with a group. And that's been really, really great. All the things we've learned we can do on Zoom. Like we started a book club this year on Patreon with our fans, and we're going to do like Dungeons and Dragons in a week or so. So we've gotten really creative with Zoom, I guess.
Well, I think some of these ideas are really cool, especially, you know, there are two things here that, well, they're all really good topics, but I love the idea for songwriters using books as inspiration and using poetry as inspiration, right? And I think it's important to differentiate from inspiration and, I don't want to say plagiarism, but I do want to say, somehow lifting a theme, you know, verbatim from those things. I think inspiration is really important. And I think it's hard, you know, for any level songwriter to figure out where to take an inspiration, something you're obsessed with, like, say, Old Greg, and turn it into something that triggers an emotion in you, right? Instead of just saying, I like Old Greg and I want to do Old Greg, right? But what emotion or what creative fire does that stoke inside of you to do that? So I think that's really cool kind of an idea. And I think it would help a lot of people. And it looks like the fee is very modest and you know, it's something that people could do for sure.
I think, yeah, what's cool about it is that, you know, if I were a songwriter and just starting out, or even at any level of songwriting, like, it's good to tap into the idea that there are places you can get stuck.
That's right.
You can get stuck starting the song. You can get stuck halfway through, and you can get stuck on like the last line of the chorus with like the most important line. That's where I get stuck all the time.
Right.
And so, like, one of the first ways that we started learning how to overcome those parts of being stuck is to lift from poetry and change three of the lines. Take the first sentence of a book and change one word. Now it's your sentence.
Like, right.
All
right.
Art has an element of plagiarism, but it's got this negative connotation, and I think it needs to be more phrased as a collaboration, because that's how we make new art, is by being inspired by others and then using that art to kind of collaboratively make something else.
Yeah, it's so well said. And I remember, Jim, when we had an interview with Chuck Prophet, one of our favorite singer-songwriters, and And he was talking about when he first got into punk rock, and he was like, well, I listened to it, and I was like, man, these guys are just doing Chuck Berry. This is going to be easy. You know, and it speaks a lot to that. And also, like you said, continuing to create and move forward. I mean, you got to create something to get pet to the next one. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you guys have done some work for television, for commercials, things like that. Was that all just songs you already had that were licensed, or do you ever do, like, you know, write original music for those venues? You do stuff like almost like on commission.
Yeah, one of the first things we ever did sync licensing for was actually we scored a movie when we were about, I want to say, 16 and 17. We were playing a gig at the Traverse City Film Fest, and a movie crew for a movie called One Simple Question overheard our set and asked if we could give them a couple of songs for them to use in their movie. And we were like, we can do better than that. We can write you some songs. Wow. And we can also do some scoring and arranging. So we ended up doing a lot of that for this movie. And it came out, and we did like a whole thing in theaters. We also did a project for a movie called Almost Home, which came out pretty recently. They sent us a message, and they were like, it's a really good friend of ours named Stephen Braun. He's amazing. But he was like, I'm looking for a song that sounds like this cover of Townes Van Zandt by the Bigatangas. Do you think you could write a song that sounds like this? We were like, yeah, I think so. So we were at this Airbnb in Chattanooga. We sat down and kind of thought about the movie, wrote lyrics to fit the movie, and then we recorded the song and tried to produce it in a way that sounded like what they were looking for. And sure enough, it landed sync placement. So sometimes we have songs that kind of fit and are sitting around waiting for their opportunity, like our song The Silence was used in a couple of resort commercials, or sometimes we write to fit the subject matter.
So many conversations that are sadly misconstrued and lost among the fate of needless violence. We need the silence.
Very cool. Very cool. What do you guys think the first thing you'll do, you know, in an idealized situation, like, fingers crossed, that there's a time when we, you know, get back to quote unquote normal, you know, I mean, is touring the first thing you guys want to do, or, you know, go to the Rainforest Cafe like my offspring want to do by themselves, or like what would be the first thing?
I'm gonna hug someone.
Oh, there you go. Aww. Yeah, that's a good idea. Just a random guy or
girl. First person I see on the street.
You. Give me a hug, old Greg. Yeah.
I think we are excited to start playing shows again and see people. I mean, that's been a gift to have this time to kind of recalibrate, to write and record an album and write with people. But, you know, it's one thing to write over Zoom. It's another thing. Like, we haven't met some of the people that we've written with. Like, we've never met Kim Ritchie in person. We've never met Tom Paxton. Like, we would love to write with these people in the space of their houses and, like, have lunch together. And, you know, there's a human interaction that even introverts like me kind of crave. So
Right.
Yeah.
I think, our goal is to put out, we're going to be releasing a lot of these co-writes that we're really excited about. And then later this year, we want to put out a full album. And the full album has been in the works for a couple of years. And we are so excited and hoping that we can tour it. But we've also been in lots of talks every week. You know, we have a group call with our booking agency. They're just really cool. And it's still a conversation about what's going to happen with maybe some venues doing half capacity and tying in live stream. Some venues doing outdoor shows, some venues just, you know, trying to figure out what we can do. I mean, I know that like exactly what, you know, Keith had mentioned was we've been on the road for 6 years. Like that's been our bread and butter, just having that physical interaction and talking with people at the merch table. Like we hope we can get back to it pretty soon. Yeah. I definitely miss it.
Well, if you'd like to play Suburbs Fest 2021,
right. Maybe
we're hoping. We're hoping August, I think. Okay. Is what we're looking at.
Yeah.
So,
And Keith's going to be surprised when I show up on his doorstep at like 2 o'clock in the morning and say, "I just drove from Northern Virginia. How are you doing, man?"
And give him a hug.
Stay up. Yeah, I'll give him a hug.
Give him a hug. Yeah. That's what we're going to do when the thing is over. We're going to drive around and hug our listeners.
Oh my gosh.
All of them. Yeah. In a van. Yeah.
Whether they want it or not. Okay. Now,
Patrick, you're always welcome on my couch, but you're going to have to quarantine for 2 weeks, no matter if we're done with this.
Yeah. With him, that's
actually something
normal.
That was in place before the pandemic, actually, for me. Right. Yeah, so it was kind of weird. Yeah.
Okay, so I have one more question here. Something else I want to ask you about that's a connection to me, which is most interesting to me. You guys spent some time in Bloomington, Indiana once, right? So I went to college there. That was to be the 1890s, and tell me about your time in Bloomington and you worked there and you worked with a guy whose other work I know as well. So.
I love Bloomington. First of all, I got this necklace at a thrift shop in Bloomington connected to the Laughing Planet burrito place and like the record store underneath. Yeah, that's Bloomington's got a special place in my heart, and that was like 8 years ago when we were recording our album Bittersweet, which kind of was our real debut into, you know, more of a national touring scene and situation. And we did half that album with Paul Mahern, and we did the other half with a guy named Rob Feaster in Nashville. And so there's a good mix of what we were working on back then. We were both in high school at the time at Interlochen Arts Academy, and we skipped prom to go record this record. And
wow.
Yeah, it was worth it. It was really a good experience. And, you know, being in Bloomington for an extended period of time is, you know, a good memory.
Yeah, it was the first time I ate really good tofu.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that, Sam.
I do.
Yeah. That was very cool.
Yeah, that Indiana tofu.
I was going to say, that's not something anyone's ever said before. Yeah,
that's the next band name for your secret show. Indiana tofu.
Such a great band name. Wow.
Yeah, there you go. Talk about Paul. He was in two bands that I really like. I mean, I know he's been in more than that, but he was in the Zero Boys. Mm. Great band. Mm-hmm. And then this band when I was in school there called the Datura Seeds. I don't know if you guys have ever heard that album the Datura Seeds put out, but it is fantastic. So and I think it's on the streamings, so you can find it.
Yeah, no, it's through him that we met our friends Lily and Madeline. They're really great sister duo out of Bloomington.
Love them.
Or Indianapolis rather, I think. But we've been good friends with them, and we've always kind of been like watching each other from a distance, like that whole, you know, just working with the same producer and kind of being the same age and playing similar music. And so it's cool to meet musicians your age doing what you're doing through any avenue, really.
Yeah. One thing I learned from Paul, like, in this, because we've been worked with a lot of different producers, is like the concept of doing a lot of layering in the production and combining different instrument tones. So we use strings in almost all of our songs, like the cello and the violin. And so I still remember some of the things we did with him, like layering doubling the cello or mixing a cello with a piano or organ tone, like stuff like that is something we've been carried with us.
I think that's great. And I think that, you know, obviously it can really help with the sort of richness of the sound, but with you guys, with how many instruments you play and your backgrounds and everything, can that, does that also become a challenge to sort of exercise restraint sometimes and not want to put everything into the mix?
That was the big thing with this record, I think. We would kind of hit points where we were like, well, what does each section of the song need? How does it build? Does it need to build? Like, these were constant, we're all overthinkers and type A's, and so we were just really, like, trying to get hyper-focused in on, you know, restraint is a huge portion of what we were discussing, but there was also this idea of, like, okay, but serve the song. Like, even if, right, if there's a point of the song that just needs that high string part and, like, needs, like, 40 other string tracks on it, like, do it, you know? But, yeah, it definitely, like, helped the song build was a huge concept. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of times when, you know, we're sitting there and then we're like, oh, and at the end of this song, we're going to have, like, the strings doing all this stuff and, like, and then it was like we kind of got to it and we're like, oh, maybe not, because we did that on the last three songs. So maybe we should chill on this one. You know? So I think what Sav said is true of that, like, serve the song, really figure out what the song wants to be as well. But yeah, we had a lot of fun recording this record up in the attic, especially just like figuring out how to mic things in certain ways, like in the room that we were doing, and like that kind of becoming part of the production as well. So yeah, lots of good stuff.
Clarify too, like it did not start as a recording studio. Like, we came home from tour and we had like this attic area that we all kind of crash in every once in a while, like this band lounge area. And we ended up taking, like, CD boxes that hadn't sold anything yet and, like, building them up into partitions and throwing blankets over them and, like, thumbtacking blankets to the ceiling. Just stuff to, like, using the elements of what we had.
Okay, well, I want to ask you guys this question because we need to wrap up here pretty quickly. But so tell us a little bit. You've talked about the new album. And tell us a little bit what people can expect in terms of new music from the Accidentals.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got so much new music coming out, and we can finally say that we're putting out new singles. So January we'll have a new single out.
The newest heartaches on the radio again. No one's listening anymore. On Independence Day we were driving through the hills. We were Bozeman. The reds and blues of fireworks in backyards lit the sky. We were so much greener then. Who knew we were drunk on borrowed time, waiting on a wildfire.
Singles out, and probably a 5-song EP by spring, and then we're going to build up to a full album later this year, and yeah, we're bringing on some new management and in lots of discussions about best way to release, and one of our goals for this year is to like put everything out with music videos, just have visual content and lyric videos and really good mixes and acoustic versions. And so all this year we'll have new music out.
Sweet.
That's great. And then, like, as you mentioned, hopefully be able to tour a bit or perform some, you know, later in the year.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Hey. But in the meantime, people can, you know, check out your music online, and you'll have physical product as well.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, definitely. Thanks very much, Keith, for bringing the Accidentals to our show.
Hey, thanks, Jim and Patrick, and thanks to the Accidentals.
Oh, man. So great, great to meet you guys.
Thank you very much, all, and you know, good luck with all your endeavors this year, and hopefully, you know, 2021 will be a great year.
That's right, and I think we have a solid yes on the Suburbs Podfest.
Yes,
that's right, definitely. Absolutely. Okay. All right. Thanks again to everyone, and check out the Accidentals' music, and their website is, what was that again?
It's theaccidentalsmusic.com.
All right. Katie, Sav, Michael, thanks very much for being on our show.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
With us has been
Keith Jacobson.
And we'll talk to you all later. Daydreams out of control.
I had no idea the show even existed, and I'll tell you really quick. I was playing my middle offspring, who was in a band for a while and likes a lot of music, a Butthole Surfers record, and MJ said, that just reminds me of old Greg. And I'm like, what is old Greg?
Wow.
And then it was over.
That's great.
That,
so. I would have never put those two together.
Gibby Haynes reminded her of old Greg, I guess the same voice. Yeah, so. Oh, I'm glad you guys are in the know.
Yep. I love that.
You love me? Could you learn to love me?
Don't get me quoting. I won't stop.
There's a lot of really good music references on that show. Whoever's editing this,
sorry
cut all this
in advance.
Out, but it's good. Yeah.